How's it going, listeners? Chris GST here, web admin for pwponderings.com. We're finally doing this. This is the podcast I was telling you all about, where we're going to take questions directly from you, the listeners, and we're going to put a booker in the hot seat. And of course, the first man gracious enough or possibly ill-advised enough to come on the podcast, Drew Cordero, Beyond Wrestling and WSU. Drew, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing good, but I mean, we're finally doing this podcast because we finally got all of the DVDs shipped. That's honestly, it's a good problem to have, though.
Yes. I appreciate Mama Cordero sending me the DVD. I appreciate that.
There, you know, there's two reasons that it took a little bit longer than we had anticipated to get the DVD out. One is I really, I had a very specific vision, let's say, of how I wanted the DVD produced. And obviously, for those of you that have seen it, it's got three different camera angles, which most independent wrestling shoots are two. And it also has three different audio options, the no commentary, my commentary, which is more storyline oriented, and then the wrestler commentary, which is more action, sillies, goofs, being in the moment, having a good time at an incredible show. And it's funny because whenever I've been getting feedback on the DVD, like, of course, people are talking about how awesome the matches are because we had a really good show. But it really makes me very happy that people are also commenting on the production because I think it's a step up from your average independent wrestling DVD. And, you know, I think if it takes a couple extra weeks to get out, I think in the long run it's worth it because, again, with the different audio options alone, like the replayability factor is certainly there. And if you're going to be making an investment of $15 then with shipping on top of that, like, of course, like we certainly want to make sure that the juice is worth the squeeze.
Absolutely, and I could not do this alone. Senior editor Jerome Cusan is also on the line tonight. Jerome, how are you doing?
I need to come on here just bury Beyond Wrestling because that has never been done before. So that's why I'm here.
Not for a while. People don't still hate us, do we? We do live shows.
Well, there's still that Facebook page.
You're not a backyard show, so I think you're somewhat legitimate.
Legit. Well, as always, as we said, we took questions from you, the readers, and we appreciate all of the submissions that came in. I am going to say right off the bat, there are a few that I thought were possibly joke questions or ones that were not on topic, so I apologize if you don't hear your question asked. And it was a legit question.
Can we get a sample? Can we get a sample of one of those?
I don't have them anymore.
You deleted them. You bastard.
I did. I am a horrible person. Everyone's going to hate me now. Not like they didn't have enough reasons already.
A lot of people hate you anyway, so it's no great loss.
Exactly. And Jerome, I mean, you don't ever help that, right?
Nope. I do everything I can to bury you, so.
Exactly. All right. So why don't we start with this? So Drew, we appreciate you being on the show. And of course you are in the hot seat right now. So why don't we
get my plugs in because we got a big tournament coming up.
Yes. Well, yes. Why don't we get that out of the way first?
I'll talk shit on whoever you need as long as we can promote the tournament for tomorrow, too, coming up November 15th, 16th. Those will be the studio tapings, the secret shows. We still do have a couple spots for those. If you're interested, want more details, you can email us at beyondwrestling@gmail.com. And then the biggest live event in Beyond Wrestling history. I'm sure TJ Hawk is going to be pleased having to review a five-hour show. But tournament for tomorrow to two finals. That's not how it's pronounced. The tournament for tomorrow to finals. Fet Music, Providence, Rhode Island, starting at 4 o'clock on Sunday, November 17th. We've got the Iron Man match between Biff Busick and Eddie Edwards. We've got the tournament finals. Elgin versus Jaka for the first time ever. Putting two Stugatzes in the ring and Tommaso Ciampa and Chris Dickinson, which is just a bad idea all around. We've got a 10-team tag team gauntlet. At least three WSU showcase matches, depending on who will be eliminated from the tournament in the previous days. And I don't know, man. I'll probably add another match or two just because I don't like going home. It's
apparently,
bad.
My
wife beats me.
Apparently, Eat Rotten is your booking model based on the number of matches that you've booked for the show.
Dude, earlier, a couple of weeks ago, somebody was like, your shows are starting to look more like IWA Mid-South than PWG. And it's like, that's the biggest compliment somebody could pay me. We already have a PWG. Let's do something different. Let's get crazy. Dude, for $15 in advance at lookmondofans.com to be able to watch a show that's going to go on for like 5 or 6 hours, like that seems like a good value. Just have a good time, you know what I mean? If the show's too long, I don't know what to tell you. I don't believe in that. Honestly, I'm a big proponent of no such thing as crowd burnout.
Wait a minute, Drew. I don't think I heard that plug. So for $15, we get what?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, dude, there's a 10-team tag team gauntlet and an Ironman match. So the show could ostensibly go 5 or 6 hours.
Awesome.
Well, picture and you're picking fans to stand for 5 or 6 hours.
Well, no, I mean, they don't have to. They can sit on the floor. They're not gonna be able to see well. You know, they could have purchased a VIP ticket.
They're encouraging good fitness with these 5 or 6 hour shows. So I can stand for
5 or 6 hours. It's not that big of a deal.
You'd be surprised, Drew. I did see recently, though, on your Facebook, you put the singlet back on, though, huh?
Yeah, I don't know. We were doing the Church of Providence shows. They get weird.
That's all he has to say about himself in a singlet. It got weird.
We're gonna be talking about my booking decisions leading into American Rana and the Church of Providence show. I actually let one of the wrestlers book that show, so I don't know if they thought it was gonna be a rib or if they just had faith in me putting on a singlet as far as getting a crowd raucous. But believe it or not, for all these Church of Providence shows that we've done, this is far and away the best reception that we've ever got. And you know, we're playing mostly to a hipster crowd because even these are like hip hop shows, and like the people that come aren't fans of hip hop. They're just like people that want to see shit that they don't normally see. It would be like going to a like a restaurant for the first time and be like, oh, what should I have? Oh, well, we have this sampler of all things that you've never tried before. That's kind of what the Church of Providence shows are like. It's like, oh, let me dabble in different types of entertainment, pro wrestling, hip hop, burlesque. Then they do the fan contest. Sometimes there's like experimental like improv rock. They're very, very weird. But this was the first time that we actually left the show where people were like, oh, shit, that was fucking cool. Like, we really want to come check out your wrestling organization. Because it's a difficult format. It's been very hard to nail. And rather than trying to prevent something more straightforward in terms of what an independent wrestling audience would probably like to see, the card that we presented was kind of like a ripoff of like an episode of Monday Night Raw from like 1998. It was very, very story-oriented. I don't know, very whimsical, but the people liked it. And at the end of the day, if it's our job as, you know, entertainers to make sure to send the people home happy, we did our job. So no complaints from me.
Totally Tool wrestling when you mentioned putting the singlet on.
Oh no, it was way better than that. I'm fucking sick. I just, dude, like, what am I going to do? I'm going to book 2 promotions and wrestle for both of them. Like, that's just a little too much, but, hey, man, if the time calls for it, at least we know that I can pop probably another 50 or 75 tickets in Providence, so.
Yeah, now
it's just... Oh, you guys aren't laughing! You guys aren't laughing! Fuck you guys!
Well, I'm laughing on the inside.
Yes.
Hey, the 16th spot in the tournament for tomorrow is still open, so.
I nominate Jerome.
No! Nobody wants to see me in a single.
I'm saying me.
Then that's just a vanity project, Drew. I'm not going to lie.
I'm not going to lie, Drew. I want to see a battle royal with you, DJ Hyde, and John Thorne.
That's not a battle royal. That's a triple threat.
I mean,
over the top rope and everything.
I want to see you take a DJ Hyde lariat. That would make my day.
Yeah, maybe it'll happen. I don't know.
Man, that's cold. Anyway. So Drew, what else do you have coming on?
You guys just had me on to insult me. Like, thank you. Great podcast.
Hey, we let you plug your stuff. We can insult you all we want if we let you plug.
Comes at a price, huh?
That's all it takes. Yep. Man, we're cheap. Anyway, so Drew, do you have anything going on before we get into this?
Do we have anything going on? We have the tournament for tomorrow, too, going on. If the VIP tickets are sold out, so if anybody's coming, you got to get the general admission tickets. They're $15 in advance. They're going to be $20 day of show. And, yeah, and like I said, it is going to be a longer show. But the way that it's looking like it's going to be planned out, it's not going to be a full-fledged doubleheader with WSU, but maybe like a show and a half. So, I don't know. It's going to be a good time. And as far as what we have beyond that, literally nothing. We have nothing set after November 17th, but I don't anticipate that'll be our last show. We'll probably lock down a couple more dates for Beyond Wrestling. As far as WSU, obviously we've got a new co-owner in DJ Hyde. We're going to be returning to Voorhees, New Jersey on Saturday, February 8th. Doubleheader with CCW's anniversary show. That's pretty much it for plugs. I mean, the typical stuff, the Facebook, the Twitter, YouTube.com/Beyond Wrestling. We actually just cracked a 3 million video views, and I didn't even make that big of a deal of it. But now that I'm on the podcast and you brought it up, it's pretty good, man. 3 million views, that's pretty good.
That is tremendous. That's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. Constant growth on the YouTube. And we actually had a taping out in St. Louis that I was not even a part of, a pilot taping to try and test out possibly, you know, running Beyond Wrestling shows in different parts of the country that we haven't been to recently. So that was headlined by Michael Elgin versus Jonathan Gresham, a match which certainly lives up to the hype. So I'm excited to be able to get that footage online, as well as a taping that we had at the Chikara Wrestle Factory and a taping that we had at the CZW Academy just a couple weeks ago. So we've got plenty of fresh content that's going to be coming up. And I don't know. Beyond Wrestling, man. Everything's still on the up and up. If it wasn't, I wouldn't be doing this podcast. I'd be sulking.
If a Beyond Wrestling show happens without Drew Cordero in attendance, is it a Beyond Wrestling show?
It's not actually the first time. At the Miracle Workers taping, I had booked the show, and I forget that I had a wedding to go to that day. I believe that was the taping that lasted until maybe 3:30 or 4 a.m. That was Sugar Dunkerton's debut for Beyond Wrestling. So I can't even imagine what kind of an introduction that's like. Like, hey, dude, what's going on tonight? Oh, I don't know. Like, the promoter's not even here, and we're not going to start until, like, 8:30, and we have, like, 16 matches to tape. Oh, okay.
God, do I wish the person whose wedding that was listening to this show and heard you say that.
I mean, it was my cousin. Whatever.
There you go. That's family. That's
my, if my cousin's listening to this, excellent. Excellent. My family must be really proud of me.
That would be tremendous.
I am proud of you, Drew. I am proud of you.
You should be, man. We do some pretty fucking good things with Beyond Wrestling. The Tournament for Tomorrow lineup is so sick. It's one of those things that people aren't really going to give a shit until after the matches come out, and then they're like, whoa, like, I never heard of that person before. They're pretty good. I guess I'm going to start paying attention. But, you know, it's low profile by design. It's not... It's a tournament specifically designed to try and elevate wrestlers that I've come across over the last year that I think would benefit from it.
Remember when nobody heard of ACH and then he wrestled in Tournament for Tomorrow and then everybody knew who ACH was?
Ugh. Yeah.
He's all like, yes.
I think I did a disservice to the rest of the wrestling industry. Not to the fans, maybe, but the people that have to deal with him. Poor Kevin Steen.
Well, that's hey, I mean, that's exactly what Beyond Wrestling was, though, since the beginning.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right, so, of course, Jerome Cusan, you're here. You're the senior editor. You got a chance to watch the show. Do you have any questions for Drew? Why don't we get those out of the way as well?
The first question that I had was concerning the decision to open the show with Drew Gulak and Chris Dickinson. You know, I think a lot of other people would have put this in the second half of the show, possibly even the main event. But what made you decide to make that the opener?
When we first put the lineup together, I was going to put that match last. And after seeing Bip Fusick versus Eddie Edwards at We Care a Lot, which we weren't even originally going to run, I was just like, there's no way that we can't put that rematch last. And I'm a proponent of putting... honestly, I'm a proponent of putting your best match first. If you go back and look at a lot of the live shows, well, for About Time, you know, we put Aeroform versus the Super Smash Brothers first. Those are two of the most high-profile acts on the show. And they tore it down, and it's just like, if you put a match on that's going to be that good first, everybody's going to have to step up their game, or they're going to get lost in the shuffle. And as far as Beyond Wrestling goes, you know, we have created a legitimate sense of competition in the fact that nobody wants to get left behind. Everybody's there to perform to the best of their ability. So if you see a match like Dickinson versus Gulak and you have to go on after it, you know that you have to be performing at your best. And I think it's a good type of pressure to put on the performers. I mean, going back to Back in Flesh, you know, the original plan was to put Davey Richards versus Johnny Gargano on first, and unfortunately due to travel issues that wasn't something that we were able to do. But a lot of times when I'm putting together a live show, you know, going back to We Care a Lot, Bip Fusick versus Eddie Edwards opened. Going to Point of No Return, we had Chris Dickinson versus Kevin Steen open. I think a lot of people probably would have considered that to be a main event caliber match. So I really, really, really like opening with a big match first, because I think it also sets the tone for the show. If the fans are hot and they're up right from that first match, it's beneficial to the rest of the card.
I'll let Chris get to his questions, and I have a couple that I'll ask later, but what was the vibe like compared for this show as to some of the other Beyond shows when you've got a Kevin Steen, a Colt Cabana, AR Fox, Bryce Remsburg? How was the atmosphere different in the locker room and before the show as compared to a regular Beyond Wrestling live show?
You know, I don't really spend a lot of time in the locker room. I like to do a lot of like live producing and make a lot of little tweaks as the show is going on based on, you know, how certain matches are getting certain reactions, certain performers. But I just remember while I was doing the locker room meeting, like looking around, and then all of a sudden, like I looked at Kevin Cena and it's like, oh my God, like this guy's been wrestling around the world for the last 10 years. It's like, why am I giving him orders? Like something is wrong here. Like perhaps he's the one that should be, you know, leading this locker room meeting. So in that regard, it was a bit intimidating, but I've got to say, of all of the guys that we brought in, they were super professional and they were all there to make sure to elevate Beyond Wrestling as well as themselves. Because bottom line, if you have a show like American Rana and all of a sudden Beyond Wrestling becomes a destination promotion, that's more work for all of those guys. And so everybody was really supportive and really easy to work with, really hands-on. It wasn't an issue of, you know, a situation where it's like, oh, you know, I showed up, I'm going to do my match, I'm going to get paid, I'm going to get the fuck out of here. Everybody was really, really cool. So in regards to that, I would say that the vibe backstage from at least what I could get a taste of was really not that dissimilar to how it usually is at Beyond.
Did you think that while you were booking this, you know, as you said, that you sometimes put the best match first, and I've heard Lance Storm make similar comments in that if he doesn't want to be in the main event, he wants to be in the first match because that's the most important. That sets the tone for the rest of the show. When you were looking at, well, I guess, what was the original first match going to be, and then you decided, oh, you know what, why don't we make that change? Or was there a change?
I mean, the change came at We Care a Lot when we had to run Biff versus Eddie Edwards, because going into American Rana, I was like, maybe we should present two first-time-ever matches. Maybe we should do Biff versus Dickinson and Gulak versus Eddie Edwards. But I mean, dude, going back and looking at the original draft of American Rana, it was nothing what it looked like. I mean, dude, I was out drinking with my buddy one night, and he was basically like, oh, I started watching PWG. You should book a PWG show on the East Coast. And I was just like, it doesn't work like that. Like, we can't just book another promotions card. And he's like, because, you know, my buddy doesn't really follow wrestling that closely. Like he doesn't understand, like, how promotions and stuff like that work. And so I was like, well, what did you like most about the show? And he was like, Kevin Steen. He was like, you should book Kevin Cena. I was just like, there's no way it's even feasible. Like, Beyond Wrestling, we're an organization that we're not big enough. Like, Kevin Steen's not accessible to an organization in our standing. And he was just like, oh, it's too bad, man. I'd really like to see him wrestle Masada. And I was just like, you motherfucker. Like, you planted this idea in my head. And now, like, by hook or by crook, like, I am going to have to figure out a way to make this happen because I absolutely want to see that match. And then I was just like, all right, let's just get crazy. Like, let's literally take all of the resources that we've raised for the last 4 years and put them all into one show. And if it doesn't do well, like, at least we've gone out on a bang and, like, tried our absolute hardest. And, I mean, obviously, as you guys know, we ended up doing very well off the show. And what was most surprising to me is I always have been of the mentality that, like, the promotion draws based on the brand of the promotion, not necessarily any of the individual wrestlers on the card. And I was really pleasantly surprised with, like, wow, somebody like Kevin Steen, somebody like Colt Cabana, somebody like Johnny Gargano, these guys have done an outstanding job garnering a worldwide fan base. And there are people that, you know, maybe for some reason have never come out to Beyond Wrestling before, even though they've known about it, but are going to come out because one of their favorite stars is on the card. They're finally going to give us a chance. And so hopefully those are the types of people that have finally seen Beyond Wrestling. They know what it's like in person, and therefore are going to be willing to come again, even if their favorite guys aren't on the show, because they had a good time. So I think that answers your question.
It does. It did, in a roundabout way it did. Because it then kind of leads back to the fact that, so the show itself, you know, the dark match, I guess you could call it, the four-way, if you had to, you know, I guess if you had to go through the advertising again, would you have put that on first? Because generally that is one of those matches. You know, it's the high-flying style. It has all the high spots. People love it.
Absolutely.
And, that, yeah.
That match was done by design. The way that we had planned the start of the show was that there was a holding area. And what I had wanted to do was, we were doing interviews in the lounge with Nicholas Kay, and he was interviewing all of the competitors in the Best of New England Challenge matches. Because my thought process was, okay, let's say that there are fans that are coming out just to see Gargano, just to see Steen, just to see Cabana. Maybe they're not familiar with Biff Busick, JT Dunn, and Anthony Stone. So while we have them sort of in this holding area, It's almost like, have you ever been to Disney and you're waiting in line and like they show you like, you know, like a little goofy movie giving context to the ride that you're going to go on? It was kind of like that. Like, let's give context to all of the performers and let's help them flesh out their characters, you know, in front of what could potentially be a new audience. And the way that segment was supposed to end was basically with like Nicolas Cage storming off, opening the huge doors into the main room at FET. And it was like, oh shit, there's like a Beyond Wrestling studio taping that's already happening right now. Like the match was supposed to be in progress. And unfortunately the timing, was off. And again, this is one of those good problems to have. There were literally so many people in the lounge and in the lobby area that FET couldn't let any more people legally into the building. So we had to open the doors.
That's
even
awesome.
Before the interview segment was open. So, you know, with all four of those guys, it was like, oh shit, like Shane Strickland's on the card. Like, why wouldn't Beyond Wrestling advertise him? You know, David Starr, Latin Dragon, Sozio, those guys are all strong representatives of Combat Zone Wrestling who we've been working with, and I wanted to make sure that there was going to be something unique about their match again so that they didn't get lost in the shuffle. And visually, if you see the you know, ring announcer, Rich Palladino, introducing the match, and all of a sudden the fans start coming in, even though the wrestlers are ringside, like, that was a really special moment that we'll never be able to replicate again. But it made that match, like, the energy of that match, people were just like, oh shit, like, what are we walking into right here?
Right.
And all four of those guys did a phenomenal job. That match exceeded my expectations in every way. So I was really, really happy with it. And again, like, was that the official first match on the card? Like, I don't know. I guess it depends. Like, if, you know, if you want to argue semantics, like, it doesn't really matter either way. But the way that it was presented, that it was an unadvertised dark match. And, you know, we ended up having the match go online for free. So that's a lot more exposure for those guys. I think we've done, you know, maybe 1,500 hits on that match, versus the, you know, we've sold about 100, 125 copies of the DVD, which is phenomenal for us. But even still, like, it goes to show you that when we put stuff online for free, like, it garners a much larger audience.
Of course. I know. And that's kind of what I was leading to also, is that there are certain points during each match where you could tell that the fans were either into it or they weren't. For example, during the tag match, and so I've been better acquainting myself, of course, if you go to youtube.com/beyondwrestling and you check out the all-killer playlist, Team Tremendous versus EYFBO versus the Minutemen versus the Hoods, you know, these are not guys that naturally fly out of the mouths of wrestling fans when they're talking about tag teams on the indie scene. But after watching this match and a couple other matches from the killer playlist, I mean, man, I was kind of wondering what these guys are going to do that was different from what they've done before. And you can kind of tell there was the spot, and I hate to call it spot, but during the match, you had one of the members of the EYFBO on the outside, and of course he was going to, you could tell he was going to do a dive. And there's some of the fans, they were on the other side of the ring going, okay, I'm just kind of standing here, I'm enjoying the match, but I'm not really, you know, I don't know who any of these guys are. And the minute he does that, and I guess this was on the, because I saw from one angle, and then I'm assuming this was on the wrestler commentary, which I admit I haven't finished yet, but there's a different part of it where you see a different side of the match, and you see the people rush over and go, holy crap, what did I just miss? And then that's from that point on for the rest of the show, they were kind of watching all different sides. And that, I also think, gave it kind of that PWG feel, because usually during wrestling, you know the wrestling's going to take place in the ring, or if it comes out to you, you kind of know, okay, I can stand up and see all of it. But this was a point where, you know, I'm not saying that you tell the wrestlers what to do, but I think they knew that this crowd was kind of in a lull and they needed to do something to bring the attention back. And they did it. And I think that's perfect.
No, I mean, yes and no. I don't give very many instructions to the wrestlers at all. I trust their judgment is whatever they think is going to be best. You know, sometimes you do have a flop, and afterwards it's like, well, then I can go to them and say, well, this is what you guys did wrong. You know, it's not the end of the world. Now we know for next time. But, I mean, that match was aged in by Dan Barry, who is incredible. And I'm glad that he's finally starting to get the following that I feel like he's deserved since I've started to work with him. Without question, he's one of the most popular wrestlers on the Beyond Wrestling roster. And I love giving him big projects to sink his teeth into because I know that I can trust him and I know that he will deliver. But that match started off slow with a lot of comedy.
Yep.
Because it was almost like a bit of misdirection. Like, people thought, like, oh, this is the second match on the card. This is the cooldown match. And so, like, there are certain tropes that wrestling fans kind of, you know, buy into or think they know. And it's just like, oh, if the second match on the card is always the worst match on the card. And so I think that the wrestlers in that match kind of played up on that by starting off a little bit slow. But they were given
Dan Barry actually patting down all the wrestlers, you know, because he had that detective cop gimmick, whatever you want to call
right.
it.
Yeah. And so, you know, they started off slow to kind of lead the fans in that direction. Like, yes, this is going to be a Gaga match. And it seemed like once they had the fans vulnerable, they turned it up. They flipped. They topsy turvy those motherfuckers. And in that regard, it's like if you started off balls to the wall right from the start, would you have gotten the same reaction that you did if they thought that the match was going to go one way and it went, you know, the complete opposite direction? So, that match was awesome, and that match was really a match that I was – another match that I was concerned about, because it's like here's four teams that the fans obviously don't know as well as somebody like, you know, Masada or Cole Cabana or Steen or, you know, all these other guys. So while we have that captive audience, while we still have their attention, we absolutely need to deliver. And they did. And I am eternally grateful because those guys were in the toughest position, and I think that they exceeded expectations better than anybody. I was thrilled with that match. That honestly is probably one of my top three favorite matches on the entire card.
I think that one of the funniest things about you mentioned the trope of the second match, and obviously this one was very memorable. And another second match was from Bola Night 2 when they had Johnny Gargano and Kevin Steen. So I think that trope is something that, you know, I think you could play around with. And
these are things that I like having fun with, too, like certain ideas like the match after intermission, you know. And what did we run after intermission at American Rana? We ran Steen versus Masada, which probably should have been the main event. So I like having fun with these ideas. I mean, obviously that, you know, some of these, you know, tropes are more than tropes. These are tried and true booking methods. But I like having the freedom to be able to mix things up and see what effect that it has on the card. You know, I basically, when I tried to book Point of No Return, wanted to keep almost the exact same format and maybe plug in different variables, and I don't think it worked as well. So that was a good learning experience for me, and it's helped me better put together, you know, Tournament for Tomorrow's current lineup, you know, assuming there's not going to be any cancellations or injuries, in a way that I think that it's going to be even more effective than the previous two shows. So, you know, you have a popcorn match for a reason. Do you need a popcorn match? I don't agree with that. I don't think you do.
You're the person that does not believe in crowd burnout, so that doesn't surprise me.
If you're giving the crowd nonstop good matches, they're going to be up for it.
All right, Chris, I believe there are a couple of important questions for the next match, so I think you should ask them.
Well, okay, you mean from the the readers.
Tabernacle team versus Aaron Epic and Dave Cole, because it wasn't supposed to be Dave Cole in this match.
Right, that is true. So why don't we get into that? And this is from Grant Minos, and I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing that. Are the KOA going to be used more? I read somewhere that you weren't going to book Sugar. Can you explain why you booked the tag teams? Oh, well, I guess against each other all the time. That probably was for the match I was referencing, and then of course the KOA match. So, Drew,
well, I mean, why do we book the tag teams against each other all the time? Is he referring specifically to the Minutemen versus the Hoods, or is just like why do we have tag teams wrestle each other in tag team matches?
I would assume he's probably talking about the Team Tremendous versus EYFBO Minutemen and the Hoods.
I mean, we were trying to build up a rivalry where it's like all of these teams are evenly matched. So we put them in, you know, we put them in different combinations in many matches. First, we did the Minutemen versus the Hoods. Then we did the Minutemen versus the Hoods. Then we did the Minutemen versus EYFBO. Then we did the Hoods versus EYFBO. Then we did a three-way match. Then we did a dogfight. And then we did the four-way match. It's like I felt like the best way to establish all of these new teams at once was to put them against each other as much as possible. So that way the fans could get familiar with them. And, you know, over the course of that 6-month period of time where they were legitimizing themselves, it got to a point where I feel like we could, you know, put them against other tag teams and they would be able to hold their own. And not only in the ring would they be able to hold their own, but in terms of the popularity of the fans. So that was why I wanted to continue to put them against each other. As I thought that it would elevate all of their profiles simultaneously, which I think to an extent it definitely did. And obviously we will put that, you know, to the test with the tag team gauntlet, where they will be used in different combinations. Coming up at Tournament for Tomorrow, too. But as far as this idea that I won't book Sugar Dunkerton, that's absurd. I will book Sugar Dunkerton every time he's available. Unfortunately, Sugar's had some, you know, real-life commitments that have come up. And one thing that I'm, you know, with the studio tapings, it's one thing. With the live shows, it's another. But I try and be as flexible as possible. I try and be as understanding as possible. And bottom line is, like, there are real life things that happen outside of wrestling that are more important than wrestling. And, you know, without putting too much information about Sugar Dunkin's personal life out there, you know, he had just gotten a new job. That was a really good job for him. And it was bringing in a lot more money than his previous position. And it was one of those things where it was like, you know, it gets to a point where it's like being on the road and you know, being unsure of your income, like you do need to have some stability. And so for, you know, Sugar to get that position, like I was super happy for him. Not in like, you know, I'm a promoter, he's a performer, like he's fucking up my card. It's like, no, I'm his friend. Like if he's doing well, like then I'm happy for him because he's a guy that I like and he's a guy that's been helpful for me. And if me being there for him means allowing him to miss this booking, so be it. I wish I was given more notice than what I was given, because it was only a couple days. But I certainly didn't think it was the type of situation either where we were like baiting and switching the fans. And even up until that point, it was kind of like, hey, let me see if I can still try and get there. Don't say anything. And of course, day of the show, it came and he wasn't able to make it. And it sucked. But I think that it actually worked out to be beneficial for Aaron Epic, who, you know, has been sort of pigeonholed as a tag team wrestler, at least in Beyond Wrestling, ever since About Time. And for the opening moments of that tag team match where he was going to beat down by Tabernacle Team, like, the people were really getting behind Aaron Epic in a way that they never had before. And we had a couple extra guys on standby. I usually, you know, one of the reasons that the cards are so overbooked are just to make sure in the event that, you know, there's any cancellations or injuries, there's guys that are already going to be there that we can rely on in order to sort of switch around some of the slots. And unfortunately, Dave Cole was one of those guys that I didn't have anything for on the American Rana card, just because he had been somewhat inconsistent with his appearances for Beyond Wrestling in the past. And I knew that he was going to be taking a trip to South America later in the year, and he wasn't somebody that could be relied upon long term. But he had done such tremendous work in 2012, especially the 2 out of 3 falls and 3 out of 5 falls match with Aaron Epic, that I thought, hey, this is an interesting dynamic. This is an interesting relationship to play on. You know, he's the top guy that deserves a spot on the show that isn't here. Like, let's make it a point to find something for him. And I thought from a storytelling perspective, the story of that match was very interesting. It was a totally different dynamic than it would have been if it was Sugar and Epic teaming. And I think that, you know, Aaron Epic has come out better for it. And if a time comes where Sugar Dunkerton's schedule is able to slow down, he's always going to spot waiting for him at Beyond Wrestling. Because he was one of the first few guys that was like a quote-unquote name that had a strong following outside of the Beyond Wrestling bubble that approached me and said, hey, I like what you're doing. And he used it as a platform to try out different things for him. I think, you know, the influence of his, you know, Resistance Pro persona, where he's not being typecasted as a, you know, comedy basketball player, which is a character that he excels at playing. But when you're a performer, you know, you want to show that you can have some range as well. And I feel like Beyond Wrestling provided that for him. And I was more than happy to be able to give him that platform to show that he was more than just a, you know, a silly guy, that he was, you know, could be a more serious wrestler when the right situation called for it. So, I apologize if anybody thinks that we're not going to work with Sugar Dunkerton again. Hopefully that's not the case. And again, as soon as he's available, I'd love to have him back.
Well, I think I can kind of tie in the next match on the card that we didn't really talk about a lot was Colt Cabana versus Jaka, and you just mentioned it. And we have a question from Devin C. Do you think Jaka can get over as a more serious wrestler, or is this just something different from Mangue? And I had a similar question in the terms of, you know, on the commentary for the All Killer playlist, you know, you do talk about, you know, Jaka and kind of being like an alternate persona, but I also think that he's putting, I don't want to say like he wasn't putting effort into his Johnny Mangue, but as Jaka, I think there's just a different aspect of it. So I guess, you know, you can answer the question, but also what did you think of the transition between Mangue to Jaka?
It was extremely important because I feel like in Beyond Wrestling, which was the biggest platform Mangue had at that point, and it kind of run his course. You know, we had given him Necro Butcher. We gave him ACH. We gave him Gargano. We gave him Davey Richards. And he still wasn't connecting with the crowd in a way that we had all hoped. And it's a shame because he's really, really, really good. And so when the Jaka persona was created, it turned out to be like a resurgence. Like it was like a shot in the arm. And he's so dedicated to playing the character, and he's so good at it. And, you know, there's a lot of silly gimmicks in independent wrestling in 2013. But when you watch Jaka, it's not funny. It's not like a comedy guy. It's not like, oh, who's this goofy, you know, guy pretending to be like the Samoan Savage. Like, he's convincing. And that's a testament to how good of a performer he is. So I do think a time will come when being a Savage character may be somewhat limiting in terms of the work that he's able to get. But there is no question that his profile is higher than it has ever been, because through that character, he was able to work with the Wrestling Is organizations, which exposed him to an entirely new audience. And I think that if those fans, you know, ever get a hold on some of his previous work as Johnny Mangway, you know, and see how charismatic he is and understand that, you know, he's a guy that can do an interview and is also, you know, a skilled wrestler, even though sometimes the character prohibits him from showing that skill set, I think they'll be pleasantly surprised. So, long term, I do think that a time will come where he will have to expand and freshen that character. But like I said, as it stands right now, Jaka has probably been his strongest body of work.
No, I agree, and I think that he's doing well with it. It always kind of reminds me of the Umaga character, where when you first saw it, when it first debuted, you were like, oh, it's going to be one of those stereotypical, possibly even offensive characters. And then it got to a point where people were like, oh man, Umaga could be champion. And I think Jaka could do the same here. And then I think you picked a good opponent for him, and Colt Cabana. I mean, that was just if there is such a thing as a perfect wrestling tandem, Jaka going up against Colt. I mean, because Colt has the following. He also has the legitimacy in the ring. And to have Jaka in there with him, win or lose, was going to help boost him no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, Colt Cabana is the most popular independent wrestler in the world. And Jaka has been one of the strongest performers in Beyond Wrestling. He's been there right since the very start. And I wanted to reward him for his hard work and his loyalty. I think a match with Colt Cabana did just that.
Yeah, so I was going to ask if you thought that Colt Cabana, you know, I know you talked about sort of the company being the draw, but if you thought that Colt Cabana would be considered the biggest draw of all the names on the show.
Yeah, without question. Without question. Colt Cabana is far and away the biggest draw in independent wrestling. He's probably a bigger draw than most of the guys that you see on TV. What he's created for himself is truly something special. And, you know, one of the reasons I paired him up with Jaka, another one of the reasons I should say is that, you know, Jaka and Cabana, they're two guys that can wrestle, but they're two guys that have those character elements, too. So it was one of those situations where the match could be a little bit more complex if the performers chose to go in that direction. And as you saw, it starts off a little bit silly, but then becomes a lot more maybe wrestling heavy than I think what people are used to seeing out of Colt Cabana in 2013. And I was really happy with how the match came out. You'll probably hear me say that about every match on the show because, you know, I thought we knocked it out of the park. But Cabana was super, super cool, too. And there actually was a point when I was backstage and he was giving feedback to one of the wrestlers. And, you know, he doesn't need to do that. Like, he's got so many different he's got his hand in so many different projects that if he wanted to, he could just be like a complete dickhead and just go fucking hang out in the corner. And nobody's going to bat an eye to it. But that's the thing about Colt, is at the end of the day, the reason that he has all these projects is because of wrestling. And it's because he still loves wrestling. And it's awesome to be able to work with people that have that passion, where that passion has driven him to become one of the most successful contemporaries. This guy is, like, when people look back 20 years from now, as far as what Colt Cabana did, he's going to go down in wrestling lore. Like, he's unbelievable.
I do have a question. So, following up, of course, is Kevin Steen versus Masada. And, of course, the New England Challenge, you know, the three matches with JT Dunn, Johnny Gargano, you know, AR Fox, Anthony Stone, and Biff Busick and Eddie Edwards. But, you know, you talk on commentary about Masada's knee injury, and, of course, there were a lot of shows he worked that he probably didn't, not saying that he didn't have to, but, of course, he upheld his, you know, his bookings, and, you know, I respect him a ton for that. Had Masada been in better health, could you have seen Steen Masada being the main event? I know that you said that you always when you saw Busick versus Edwards as the main event, but was there a chance just because of, one, first time that they fought each other, and two, just the style that they do? You know, you knew you were going to get a bloodbath. Maybe not a bloodbath, but you know what I mean. They do that.
You know, when you guys had asked earlier the other match that I'd considered as far as going on first, now you're refreshing my memory. I had considered at one point putting Steena Masada on first. And
Wow. Yeah, that would have.
When I had actually run the idea by both of them, they had said that they wanted to make sure that they had the time to prepare the match, that they the type of match that they wanted to have, that, you know, in case there were any transportation issues, they didn't want to be rushed day of. And so, you know, I have nothing but respect for that. And so that's why I put them on after intermission, which in a lot of ways is like, it's like going on first. I wanted to make sure to put on a big match after intermission. And admittedly, yes, I had my reservations about the condition of Masada's knee, especially after seeing the match that he had with Dickinson at CZW a couple of weeks before, which was a much slower, much more methodical match. But that was, you know, come to find out, that was just a situation of that was the story that those guys wanted to tell. That was the type of match that they wanted to have. It wasn't anything that he had any restrictions as a result of the injury to his knee. Since obviously that, you know, that was setting up the angle where he was injured and then would wrestle Drew Gulak injured, which was then set up, you know, Drew Gulak's CZW title win. So, yes, I'll admit, I was concerned about the condition of Masada's knee. And looking back on it, I think it only enhanced the match because there are certain moments, especially at the end when Kevin Steen does the cannonball onto his knee. Like, that is a moment that will be etched in my mind as long as I live, where it added so many elements of drama that, you know, you couldn't replicate if you were trying to tell the story because of Masada's knee. And, you know, even talking to Christina Von Erie when she, you know, because she had traveled with him that day, you know, she had even told me, like, you know, he's worried about this match. Like, this match really means a lot to him. And I know that Masada, unfortunately, has been... He's another guy that's gotten pigeonholed as far as just being a deathmatch guy. Did either of you guys get to see the match he had with Elgin earlier in the year for AAW?
I know Jerome... yes, I've seen it. And Jerome...
I mean, I've seen multiple Masada matches in CZW and the Elgin match, and he's far from just being a deathmatch wrestler.
Right. He's a really good wrestler.
He's good. I mean, if he's in the ring with the right opponent, he's very good.
He's a very good wrestler. And bottom line, he doesn't get many opportunities to show how good of a wrestler he can be. And so, you know, he wanted to make sure to make the most of his opportunity. And, dude, he could have just fucking come in and collected a payday and dogged it, and nobody would have batted an eye. Because, you know, because he's injured. It's just, it happens sometimes. He could have also canceled the booking and not followed through with his commitment. But instead, he put on one of the best matches of the entire card, absolutely gave it his all. One of those situations where it's like, you know, not looking forward to tomorrow. Like, if this is the last match I wrestle, then I'm going to make sure that it counts. And I have nothing but respect for both of those guys for really laying it all on the line. And obviously, Steen was in a difficult position too, because, you know, he has to make sure to protect his opponent. You know, he doesn't want Masada getting any further injured. Those guys did a tremendous job. So, like I said, that's a match that could have went on first. That's a match that could have went on last. But the way that it ended up, it worked out really well with the position that ended up going in. It was a very chaotic way to start off the second half of the show.
It really was, because then you had the three matches, and they're just all of them very technically sound. And obviously with the six men involved, you wouldn't expect anything less. But they were all different in their own way. Of course, Anthony Stone versus A.R. Fox. I do want to say, was there... in that match, you know, after, you know, talking to them afterwards, because it did feel there were a couple sequences in there where they kind of felt it's going to have a certain effect on the crowd. And I don't know if they hit that or if they reached what they wanted to. But then when looking back, because, you know, like I said, I watched this several times, and then looking back on it, I was like, okay, there are certain high flying aspects. I'm like, well, they did something different. And as you said, Beyond Wrestling has a lot of experimental wrestling in it. Do you think that Stone and Fox took that chance to do that instead of just going, you know what, let's just do one of the matches that everyone knows that what AR Fox is going to do? You know, he's going to do the flippy and the high spots. They kind of did something different than what I expected.
Yeah, and I know that Anthony, I feel like the story that they were trying to tell is that they both wanted to one-up each other at each other's game. I think that Anthony Stone wanted to take this opportunity to show that he is a good high flyer, even though he never really, you know, displays that ability. And it was, the match itself was a bit of a cat and mouse. And Anthony Stone's another guy that's been very dedicated since the second year of Beyond Wrestling. And I really wanted to reward his loyalty by giving him, you know, the biggest test of his career. He had always asked me since we started working with Fox, you know, can I please wrestle Fox? Can I please wrestle Fox? And this was finally the show that was like, you know what? Like, I'm going to give you that test, and it's going to be in a high profile situation, and it's sink or swim. And you know, if that's the only two ways you're going to evaluate the match, then I would say that he definitely swam. Yeah. You know, they wanted to wrestle out of the box. And one thing that I think that AR Fox is unfairly criticized is that, you know, people just say like, oh, he's just a spot guy. Like, he has no personality. He doesn't know how to sell. And, you know, with AR Fox, especially when he did the WWE 4 showcase match at We Care A Lot, a lot more cocky, a lot more confident, a bit of what's the word that I want to use? I don't know. I hate to say this word, but like a bit of swagger to him. And especially the way that the card worked out. And it was just coincidentally, because believe it or not, I didn't assign finishes to every match on American Ron. I left a couple of them up to the performer. That turned out to be the only match on the card where one of our guys beat the outsider. And when Anthony Stone got that win, it was so unexpected. And it's just one of those things. It's funny the way that it worked out. It's cool the way that it worked out. I'm happy that it worked out that way, but it wasn't necessarily by design. But it was like, you know, when JT Dunn fell short to Gargano, when Biff fell short to Edwards, all of a sudden it's like, holy shit, Anthony Stone was the guy that pulled it off over AR Fox. And maybe AR Fox's cockiness, you know, got the better of him. Maybe it was just a little bit too much. And I think that AR Fox could be a very effective heel, especially if put in the right situation, which is funny because he's not like that at all in real life. He's such a humble, quiet guy.
Well, I think there is a way, though, to be a heel when you're humble. I mean, I agree with you. I don't understand the criticism of him having no character either, but then you see people, and I know people are going to hate me for this, but I'm going to bring up an MMA analogy. You have Jon Jones, who everyone says, oh, he's so bland. But he's kind of humble, but he knows that he's good. And I mean, he is the light heavyweight champion, and he hasn't been beaten, and people kind of hate him for that. But when it comes to pay-per-view draws, he is consistently, I think he's like number 3 or 4 in terms of numbers. So I think AR Fox can be very similar to that in that he knows he's good, but he doesn't have to tell you, like, he doesn't have to scream it.
Here's the God's honest truth, and you know, I apologize if anybody's listening gets upset, but AR Fox is booked like shit everywhere he wrestles. There's not a single place where AR Fox is booked effectively. I couldn't tell you the last time he's been in a storyline or a program. AR Fox is always booked like complete shit. Why? Because he's a fucking amazing wrestler, and they can get away with it. I think that if AR Fox was given the ball to run with as far as having to tell a compelling story in a blood feud, you know, a rivalry with back and forth, a few series of matches where he's got a rival, I think that we would see a dynamic new side of AR Fox that people maybe don't think that he has it in him, but he's just never been given the opportunity to show it. And I'll admit it, you know what I mean? Like, that's one thing about Fox is he's in such high demand. I can't work with him consistently. So it's difficult for me to say, yes, I'm going to book him in this program. So sometimes it is really easy to just fall back on what the fans are already familiar with. Oh, he's an astounding high flyer. Okay, well, if he's going to be doing all those crazy moves, by default, he has to be a babyface. And so let's just bring him in to, you know, either put somebody over or just, like, he's a guaranteed, like, he's one of those guys that it's like, it's a guaranteed good match. So you put him against guys that don't have anything else going on, because at least you'll know that they'll have a good match, which sucks, because I really, really want to see him in a high-profile program. And I mean, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't remember ever happening in CZW for the last 3 years that he's been there. He's been booked like shit in Evolve. You know,
wait, you're saying that booking him against Trent Beretta 3 times in one show isn't a good use of his time?
Is that something that happened?
Yeah. The only program that I could think of is
with Sabu, right?
But it was so inconsistent. There was no consistency from show to show.
It was like him and Sabu and John Silver against the DUF?
Oh, please. Why would you remind wrestling fans of that?
Huh,
I tried
saying.
To wipe it from my memory, and you had to bring it up.
You know, and like I totally understand. Like, you know, if you're trying to make AR Fox like the new high flyer, put him with one of the best of all time in Sabu. Like, you know, is AR Fox the new RVD? But yeah, no. I mean, it's hard to effectively tell long term stories too. Like, just wrestlers cannot be relied on, and it's not necessarily because they're unprofessional. More often than not, that's not the case. Guys get hurt. Guys get signed. Guys have real life commitments. Like, when you're
guys go to Japan.
Yeah, when you get when
well,
you're
like
getting
Air Fox to go to Chile. I mean, on the show, he was what, the Chilean Lucha Libre champion. I mean,
yeah,
Jesus,
that's so crazy, dude. He's going back there to defend his belt. That dude is too crazy. He's so good. He's such a like he is such a good guy. But that's what it's like. Hey, Air Fox, like, what are you just gonna be like the best guy? Like, how about you be a complete bastard for us? And you know, I thought he could have done more to be more effective, to really establish himself as a heel in the match. But how many people have given him an opportunity to be that heel? So it's like, you know, imagine AR Fox in 2013 having a match that he can come away from having had learned something. I love that. I love being able to put guys in that position.
Sounds to me like challenge accepted by Drew. You're going to get him over as a heel. That's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, and the next time we can work with him, you know, unfortunately we've had some scheduling conflicts, so.
Hey, I mean, I like that you're not just saying, oh, it's their fault, because obviously he is in high demand. So you can't – why put a story together and then go, oh, he's not available? I mean, I'm not saying other promotions do that, but, you know. So, Jerome, did you have any other questions? I do want to go through the list of the listener questions, but before – you know, not before anything else that you wanted to point out.
I think the Johnny Gargano-JT Dunn match was probably my favorite, and that's most likely – because I'm the Gargano fanboy over here. But, Drew, I want your thoughts on this, because I know that, you know, you've had a chance to book Gargano at times, and I know you sort of sometimes have a mixed view of his in-ring work, but what are your thoughts on sort of the way that he's improved?
I apologize if I've ever given you that perception. I mean, what makes you say that I have a mixed view on his in ring work?
I mean, maybe it's about his personality. Maybe it's about his in ring. I may be confused, but just talk about Gargano and Dunn, and we can edit this part out.
No, I mean, it's all good. If that's how you know, perception is reality. If people think that for some reason I have a mixed opinion of Gargano, I mean, you know, this is what the purpose of this podcast is for me to set the record straight. I've known Gargano, you know, I mean, not really known him. Who really knows Johnny Gargano? But I've been familiar with his work since the time that I moved out to Ohio when he was, you know, a big part of the hybrid wrestling organization. And the amount of growth in him as a performer is incredible. And not only that, he's matured a lot as a person. He's certainly grown up. You know, he's gone from being, you know, the quiet kid that you could rely on for being a good match to somebody that sort of understands his role in the world of independent wrestling, where he's like, he's one of the pillars holding up the genre. And so to see that type of confidence out of him, it's like when you have that confidence on a performer, when they know that they can be relied on and you know that you can rely on them, it's a great feeling. It really opens up a lot of doors that otherwise weren't there, because I wrestling is just as much a mental game as it is physical. And if a performer is good, but they have to be consistent in order to get to that point, they have to be confident and they have to be comfortable. And, you know, I don't think, you know, and I could be wrong, but when I knew Gargano initially, he was super, super young. And so that's not the type of thing that's going to happen overnight. He is the type of guy now that could carry a company. He is the type of guy that is legitimately holding up independent wrestling. So as far as that match goes, you know, I told JT Dunn that if he could get us booked at FET, because I didn't believe that he could, that I would give him any opponent that he wanted. And he wanted Johnny Gargano, who was a huge inspiration to him growing, you know, not growing up, but as he was coming up as a wrestler. Since I had moved back to Rhode Island, FET was my number one goal. And I had emailed them, like, sick promo packages, and it just fell on deaf ears, and nothing ever came of it. And JT Dunn was there one day and was like, oh, this would be a sick building for wrestling. And I was like, no shit, dude, I've been trying to get in there forever, and was somehow miraculously able to get the wheels in motion for us to be able to get in contact with the powers that be. When we had our first meeting with FET, I wanted him there, and you know, he came, we both dressed up, and we talked to the person that was in charge of the booking, and you know, through his help we were able to get booked at FET. So you know, of course, I wanted to reward that. And on top of that, he's good. JT is a good wrestler. It's not like it was just like, hey, it's not like, dude, sometimes you'll get guys that it's like, oh, this guy's just going to sell tickets to my show. Like, I'm just going to fucking put him on. I don't care if the match sucks. I don't care if half the crowd leaves when he's done. I was at a show like that in West Warwick the other day. They had this guy, the Candyman. They put his match on after intermission, and as soon as he was done wrestling, everybody left. And, like, wasn't that good of a match. I mean, the kid's super, super green, but that's what I'm saying. It's like sometimes guys will get spots because of the financial ramifications of it. And that was not the case at all with JT. Perhaps you'll notice a certain recurring theme throughout all this. I'm extremely loyal to my wrestlers. If my guys stay loyal to me, I will go out of my way to try and reward them as best as I can. And, you know, I can't always reward these guys financially because up until American Rana, you know, all of our live shows were either break-even affairs or we would lose money on them. So, you know, to at least take a risk like that, like, hey, man, this might be the final show we run, but I'm going to give you your dream opponent because you helped us get us in here. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't think that's politics or playing favorites or anything to that extent. You know, the same way that I gave Fox the match with Stone the match with Fox, and the same way that I give Biff a match with Eddie Edwards, who he had been asking to wrestle, and nobody had ever put it together. I like to reward my guys because they deserve it. They're good. And I stand by their work, and I think that it's important, you know, and I know this is one of the questions that we're going to go into a little bit later. Spoiler alert, I saw all the questions. But as far as, you know, why didn't I book Steen versus Gargano? Why didn't I book Cabana versus Masada? And it's just like, I wanted to reward my guys, but I think that if these wrestlers have a true drawing power based on their name value, then I should be able to put them against anybody. And the fans should be compelled to watch it. And by doing so, all of our locals were elevated to the next level in one night. You know, JT Dunn has a much higher profile than he did before the show. The same could be said about Anthony Stone and Biff Busick. And maybe a time's going to come around where, for whatever reason, you know, like, Ring of Honor doesn't let their wrestlers appear on iPay-per-views, or, like, there's a gray area with it. I mean, obviously, AIW encountered issues with that this weekend, because that's why Michael Elgin and Josh Alexander didn't appear on their iPay-per-view. So let's say, God forbid, a time comes where I can't book anybody from Ring of Honor. And our last card, just the way that it worked out, was extremely Ring of Honor talent-heavy. I need guys that I can rely on that fans are still going to want to see, that fans know not only... you know, maybe they're local, and so, you know, they're a draw based on, you know, being able to help with some of the local promotions, but also on the fact that, like, people who don't have that personal connection with them are still going to come out at the shows and not walk away disappointed because they got a lousy show because these guys aren't performing at a level that the fans have grown to expect with Beyond Wrestling. Because in independent wrestling, it is very much work rate oriented still. Obviously, you want to have variety up and down the card, but at the end of the day, the matches need to deliver if you want people coming back and paying for tickets.
So I want to ask, you mentioned A.R. Fox and sort of talked about him behaving as a heel, and Gargano sort of had this heel character in DGUSA, and he did a little bit of it in Beyond. He didn't go the full Monty, I think, but what were your thoughts on seeing Gargano wrestle as a heel based on, you know, what he's gone through in DGUSA?
I mean, JT has such a strong following locally that I think that was the right way to put that match together. I think that if Gargano, you know, sometimes you can be effective doing babyface matches too. But just the way that the match was put together, the story that was being told, where it's like JT is wrestling this guy that has had this huge influence on him. JT obviously has to be fighting from an underdog position, and that's not doable if JT's the heel. Well, that's not even true. I guess they could have, you know, decided to tell a story. It's like, hey, guess what? I grew up watching you. Now I'm better than you. You know, there's a number of different dynamics that they could have taken. But as far as what they decided to go with, like, more power to him, because many people have said that that's their favorite match on the show. And so it's like, how can you argue with those results? Again, like, you have to leave it up to the judgment of the wrestlers. Like, they have to be content with what they're doing, because you can get guys and tell them, like, hey, man, I want you to do this. And maybe they'll go along with it, and maybe they just won't try as hard as they could have. Maybe they'll phone it in. And unfortunately, that's the type of shit that happens. So you really want to make sure that everybody's happy with what they're doing, because you're going to get them to work as hard as possible.
Go ahead, Chris.
All right. So, yeah, I mean, pretty much you covered quite a bit, so I'm going to delve back into the listener questions. Dalton Bailey asks, why put Latin Dragon over? And he puts in parentheses, good wrestler, don't get me wrong, a guy like Shane Strickland.
I had heard that all of the guys, I shouldn't say all the guys. I had heard that there were issues with the attitude issues with David Starr and Shane Strickland going into the match. And we didn't want to put Sozio over just because he was a heel. We wanted a baby face up. And so I was basically advised by somebody whose opinion I, hold in high regard that those guys maybe in order to keep their sort of egos in check, maybe need to be knocked down a peg. And I don't like doing stuff like that. But it was that, I mean, that was, on paper, I thought too, it probably makes the most sense to put Shane Strickland over because he's the wrestler that the fans are probably the most familiar with. It's one of those things where, just kind of being, doing what I'm told. And honestly, on a one-on-one basis, I've never had any issues with David Starr or Shane Strickland. So,
yeah,
if there's somebody, if there's somebody's opinion that you hold in high regard, that's the type of input that they can have on the show. And I think the way that it just worked out was funny too, because it's very, very large Hispanic community. And even though I don't necessarily think that we had a turnout that reflected that, a lot of people from the venue were like, "Oh, cool! Like he wears a mask. Like he's a luchador. Like the people that live in this area would really like him." So, I mean, the match itself delivered. So. Again, you can't regret a decision like that, but I guess if there's sort of like behavioral problems that need to be addressed, that's like stupid though. Like looking back on it, like that's so stupid. Like if guys are having issues with their attitude, like you're going to, but you know what? I shouldn't say that because if the issue with the attitude is that they're upset about losing, then yeah, absolutely fucking make them lose. Like wrestling is fake. Like who fucking cares? Like Biff Busick loses every fucking match that he wrestles for us. And, like, he's probably the most popular wrestler to come out of Beyond Wrestling recently. Like, people don't – like, the fans don't give a shit about wins and losses. Why should the wrestlers? So if it is the type of thing where it's like, oh, I don't want to lose, like, yeah, I'm going to job you out every fucking opportunity I have to. Now, I didn't have that conversation with those guys that was actually the case, but that was the information relayed to me. And so, I made a decision based on somebody else's opinion because it was somebody that I trusted, and I stood by it. So we've got David Starr coming up in the tournament for tomorrow too. Obviously, if I thought that he was going to be somebody that was difficult to work with, I wouldn't have booked him. So that's not the case. In fact, I think that David Starr really is somebody that's going to be doing a huge thing in the world of independent wrestling. Because like that catchphrase, like look at it. Like I was so shocked the first time he came in for us, like nobody knew who the fuck he was. And he sold like 10 or 15 t-shirts, which is a lot for an independent wrestler. Cause we barely sell any merchandise for our crowd. So I think that David Starr is somebody that can be relied on. Somebody that I hope to incorporate more and somebody that I hope to build around. Shane Strickland, he is just not as available as much. You know, he gets more high profile bookings than David Starr. And, the issues with, him being called to the military, I'm not very good with military and I don't really pay too close attention, but I know there's been issues before. He's been booked, but he's had to, cancel on bookings because he's called onto the weekends to, fulfill his commitments either through the National Guard or the Army, whichever division he works for. So, that's just something to keep in mind. That's why Latin Dragon went over. Somebody told me to put Latin Dragon over. So Latin Dragon went over.
And Latin Dragon should be on all the posters for your next show because of the area. Clearly.
So, clearly.
That's awesome. Hey, I love his mask. So his mask is pretty awesome to me. You mentioned, actually, brought it up, and I'm sure it's because you saw the question from George Sandoz. Will guys being in ROH scare you away from using them as it has AIW?
No, not yet. I'll wait until we have an issue. I'm going to give everybody the benefit of the doubt. That's how I usually book, too. It's just like, I'll wait until there's a problem, then I'll act on it. Unless somebody gives me a good tip, like, hey, if you book the Ring of Honor guys, it's going to be a problem. But that would have to – I don't see that happening at all. They've been among the easiest to work with. Especially the line of communication that I have with those guys is unexpected because, again, I thought it was going to be the type of situation where it's like, okay, like, come to the show, collect your money, do your match, get the fuck out of there. But those guys are all really passionate about wrestling, and they really, like I said, want to see Beyond Wrestling grow. Because what's the value of a Ring of Honor contract if you can't use that to elevate yourself on the weekends that Ring of Honor's not running?
Exactly.
Which I think that's one of the huge problems, that if all of a sudden these guys can't do iPay-per-views and it's limiting the amount of shows that they can work, then yes, that does become problematic. But that's not an issue for me to necessarily address. I do plan on working with Ring of Honor talent as long as we have the option to. And I do not foresee anything that would prevent us from doing it in the near future.
So same person, George Sandoz. Will you ever do an iPay-per-view on RF video?
I don't know.
I hate to put you in a corner, Drew. I know.
This is what it's for. Like, it's nothing against RF video. As far as iPay-per-view providers go, they're the best, unequivocally. Like, you can fucking put everybody else that's run iPay-per-views and see how many have fucked up. And Feinstein's had the least that have fucked up. And, you know, that's mostly attributed to the fact that the guy Joe, who's like an unsung hero of independent wrestling, is really, really, really good at what he does. And, there are some technical issues sometimes on the side of the internet, sometimes on the side of like the production in house. But RF video, if we were going to do an iPay-per-view, I would go with RF video. Absolutely. I just don't know how much I like having to put like constraints on the show. Cause when you have to produce an iPay-per-view, you have to really stick to the time. So like it takes away some of the freedoms that you have putting the shows together. And, it's kind of like, I like the challenge for WSU, but I don't know if I want to challenge myself all the time.
And this is not part of his question, this is one of mine, because you have obviously established Beyond Wrestling on YouTube. YouTube allows live streaming. Would there still be the same constraints with the YouTube technology if you wanted to go that route? I'm just wondering.
I'm just saying formatting a pay-per-view. Like if a show's going to be on pay-per-view, like it has to be formatted. Like it's got to be 3 hours. You know what I mean? You have to run an intermission. Like the matches have to be timed out like to the minute. And whereas if it's a show being taped for DVD, if it's supposed to go 3 hours and it goes 3.5 hours, like who cares? But for pay-per-views, you have to be more considerate of that. It's not a knock on the technology. It's a knock on the format.
Sure. No, I completely agree. I was kind of wondering about that too.
If we were to do it, that's another interesting option too. Is that something that we would do through YouTube? I'd have to contact my partners, through the Post Game Network, who would then contact YouTube directly to, see, because believe it or not, like YouTube kind of did away with rentals, and I was just like, hey, like what the fuck, like how come nobody told me? And they contacted YouTube directly and were able to enable the rental option again, because we just put up BitMusic versus Eddie Edwards from the first their first match from We Care a Lot. We put it up as a rental for $3 on our YouTube channel. So I bet that we probably could contact them as far as like setting up a more professional live stream as opposed to just going through Google Plus. I honestly think it's doable, but I just don't know if I want to do it. Like I said, I really like being hands-on, and if I was going to do an iPay-per-view, I would have to put myself on commentary. And when I'm doing live commentary, like I said, like God forbid somebody gets hurt and I'm needed backstage. Like, it's just not a position I like to be in. I like to be very hands-on day of. And, like, for instance, like here's an example. When we did the first WSU show, Marty Bell wrestled Nikki Six. And the crowd was kind of like starting to, they were starting to lose the crowd from the previous match. So I was able to go and, right as they were coming out from the curtain, just basically tell them like, hey guys, like do the thing before the match starts where like the baby face goes up to the top rope and gets cheered. Then the heel goes up expecting cheers and gets booed. Because I think if you do that, then you'll have the crowd behind you a little bit more than the last match did. And it's like, if I'm sitting behind in a commentary booth, I don't have the ability to sort of provide those instructions.
No, that makes perfect sense.
I gotta bring in Kevin Ford and myself to do commentary.
Yeah, and then, dude, what if we do an iPay-per-view? What if we do an iPay-per-view and it completely shits the bed? Like, then it's just like, if we do an, luckily this isn't a bridge that we've had to cross with RF video, but like, let's say we did a WSU iPay-per-view and like it didn't work, and I was like, well, I want to issue refunds, and RF video was like, no, like that's gonna put a strain on our relationship. I'd rather not open that can of worms with Beyond Wrestling if we can avoid it at all. I think that the best solution that we've had so far is if people pre-order the DVD, they get to see the raw footage. The raw footage has the commentary from the wrestlers. And, at the end of the day, when the production is finally done, when we can provide it without any production errors, that's what you're waiting for, is for that DVD. And again, I do put a lot of pride in the production of our DVDs. Sometimes to a fault, I'll be the first to admit it. But at least to me, like there's a reason. And, I don't know. I guess if I can justify it to myself, that's really the only person I got to look at the mirror when I wake up in the morning, right?
Look, I'm still waiting for Evolved Kills from a year ago to come out on DVD, Drew, so the bar is set really low.
Cool.
All right. Let's see.
Good answer. Good political response, Drew.
That was great. So from Michelle D., you said on a podcast before that you didn't want to give wrestlers chances at others they might not wrestle in other promotions. Did you get a lot of requests for Sting, Gargano, Colt, etc.?
The best that I can anticipate that question was kind of how I answered it earlier. Is I got requests as far as not wanting to put name wrestlers against each other, or I've gone on record saying that I don't want to put name wrestlers against each other.
Right, I think that is kind of what she's asking.
And you know, going back to what I had said, I really want to make sure that all of the guys that have been loyal to me are getting a fair shake. And as much as I would have liked to have run Steen versus Gargano, let's leave that to another promotion that wants to sort of navigate those political waters. And on top of that, like, I thought that having one marquee match, like Steen versus Masada, was the name versus name match. Those are guys who had never competed for Beyond before, and I had no intention of working with not that I didn't have any intention of working with them, but I didn't have any immediate plans to work with them again. You know, those are the type of guys to me that it's like you bring in two or three times a year. You know, before I had worked with them. And again, like that was something that was great that I was able to learn through the American Rana card, is that it's like guys don't necessarily, like, I don't have to perceive guys like that. You know, if a guy like Kevin Steen comes in and does really good, like, let's bring him back next month, which is something I would have never envisioned. But yeah, I do never say never. Like, if we have the opportunity to pull the trigger on like a sick first time ever match, like, of course we're going to do that. But, you know, even take a look at Tournament for Tomorrow 2 coming up. I would say the biggest names on the card are probably Elgin, Ciampa, Eddie Edwards, and they're all facing homegrown guys again. We've got Dickinson versus Ciampa, we've got Jaka versus Elgin, and we've got Eddie Edwards versus Biff Busick in the Iron Man match. And again, that's going to raise the profiles of Dickinson and Jaka the same way that it did for JT Dunn and Anthony Stone. So it's not that I won't do it, but I mean, if you haven't figured it out by now, I'm really loyal to my guys. There's a method to my madness. I want to make sure that we're getting our guys over. You know, you might as well pull the trigger on the big question about Mark, right?
Yes, let's get into that. So we have from Henry Rivers and Ray Mathis. I'm going to put these two questions together. Why was Mr. Touchstone not booked for the show? I thought the throwbacks would be great as a tag team and beyond. That's from Ray. And from Henry, why not Mark Angel versus Drew Gulak at the show?
And the bottom line is that Mark is somebody that I invested a lot of time, you know, and there were sometimes guys that questioned why so much emphasis was put on Mark. And I feel like Mark is a really, really good performer. And I also, I mean, yeah, if we're going to do this, let's do this. Let's start at the beginning. I started working with Mark because he was brought in by Danny Danger, who I liked working with Danny Danger because he was whatever in the ring, and he was fucking really weird to work with, but he had like a sick internet following because his match with Ezekiel Jackson went viral. So he was a guy that I was always eager to work with because I knew that it was one of those things that would help raise our YouTube profile, which was always going to be a big part of Beyond Wrestling. He introduced Mark Angel and Josh Thor, who now wrestles as Usurper. They came and did our Gospel of the Boards taping, and everything was cool. And then Mark was like really aggressive as far as like, hey, let's get a building in Pennsylvania. And I agreed because when we had left Ohio, it was like, I don't want to run shows up in New England if I live in New England and everybody else lives in Pennsylvania, New York, and New Jersey. I'd rather be the one that makes the sacrifice traveling if it's going to be easier for everybody else. So Mark was instrumental in getting a building set up in Allentown, Pennsylvania for us, where we taped, let's see, World of Hurt, which was the show where our cameras shit the bed. We had to put the whole thing online for free. We taped Miracle Workers, which took us forever to get that DVD out. And then we taped Ringleaders, which I think we ended up putting that up for free. We were having a lot of production problems at that time. And through that period of time, like, I really tested Mark. I gave him some weird matches. Like, I had him wrestle the Pit Boss and, you know, Nick Talent. Not guys that are known for their wrestling ability. And Mark made the best of a bad situation and was very, like, he loved the challenges, and you know, he had done us a big favor in terms of hooking up with the building, and so it was the same thing. I wanted to pay it forward to him, and so we had sort of orchestrated a storyline towards the end of, when do we tape the tournament for tomorrow? 2 years ago. Towards the end of 2011, where he would basically feud with Drew Gulak for the entire year. And he would turn heel. He would become the number one ranked wrestler. And so, like, right there, obviously being the equivalent of our champion, like, that's another thing, too, is, like, we call our number one guy the number one guy. Like, it's not so subtle. I'm surprised that more people haven't kind of, like, looked into it a little bit more. But if you're the number one guy, like, maybe you're the guy that I'm trying to push the hardest at the time. So we put the faction together with him, and, you know, we agreed to this long-term program, and there were, maybe 10 steps along the way. And obviously what we did is we built up towards a final encounter between Mark and Gulak. And when it came time to do the final match between Mark and Gulak, this is somewhat problematic too. When we did the Shuri Charity Chowdown, the final step along the way is we teamed Gulak and Nick, because Nick turned on Mark, and then Mark was doing the Mr. Touchdown character with Dasher, and then, like, you know, Drew Gulak beat Mr. Touchdown, but he didn't beat Mark Angel. And so Gulak cut a promo challenging him. And that was because we had obviously planned on blowing off the feud. And Mark wouldn't follow through with the date. Granted, we didn't have any more dates set, but he basically told me outright that he was not going to do the final match with Drew Gulak. That Gulak was somebody that he did not trust in the ring. I thought that was absurd considering that they already worked matches before. Have continued to do so because Mark just wrestled Gulak for Gabe. And I don't understand why he's able to do it for Gabe, but couldn't do it for me when I feel like I spent a lot more time investing in building him up, even when I had people telling me that I was making the wrong decision. And I'll tell you what, guys, if there's one thing I don't like being wrong. And the fact that I had to go to some of my wrestlers and basically be like, well, you're right. You're right about this guy. He fucked us over. Sucks. So why didn't we do Mark versus Gulak? I would have done anything to make it happen had Mark agreed to it. Just to give the program a conclusion. And, you know, I've gone on record and saying that I feel like there's been two stages of Beyond Wrestling, and now we're in our third that have been both defined by rivalries that didn't get a conclusion. Corvus versus Dickinson was the defining feud for the first days of Beyond Wrestling. And Dickinson went out with an injury, and then Corvus went out with an injury, and then, you know, when they both came back, it was a different time. And the second one that really defined Beyond Wrestling is, like, in their absence, Gulak and Angel really stepped up. And it just sucks that we devoted so much time. And it's not like it was like, oh, cool, like, you know, there's four different steps that we want to hit. I mean, there's 10 different steps we want to hit along the way. Okay, around step four, we realized this isn't going to work. It was like, we had literally done the first match, and then, you know, we did everything building up the Academy of Anatomy. We had Gulak getting all of his wins back against everybody that had defeated him. We did the match in Ohio where we had Nick Talent interfere, so Gulak didn't get his chance. Then we introduced Touchdown as, like, another roadblock after Gulak had already beaten all of his challengers. And then it was just like, okay, we have nothing left but Mark versus Gulak. And couldn't do it.
Man,
and I think Mark's profile is significantly lower now than when it was when he was working with us. And yes, I'm sure Chikara not running shows probably plays a huge factor in that. But why isn't he working on these wrestling is shows if he's, you know what I mean? Like, he was the Young Lions Cup, like, if this guy's so fucking good, why isn't he working everywhere? It's a bummer, man. I really liked working with Mark, and I don't know. Does that answer the question? You know,
it's a case of somebody squandering their own talent and sort of shooting themselves in the foot. That's what it sounds like.
I feel like I don't really have the true story as far as what had happened. Because if the issue is that he didn't want to work with Gulak, then It's bullshit because he did it for Gabe. So then it becomes an issue of, well, if you're going to, you know, I don't buy that for a sec. I mean, dude, Gulak is honestly probably the best guy there is right now. There's a reason that he's our number one guy and he's the CZW champion. Like, the first time I met Drew Gulak, I was like, this is a guy that can carry a company. This is a guy that, like, without question is, like, I honestly, when I see Gulak wrestle, I'm like, this guy's the next Bryan Danielson. He's incredible. So I don't buy it for one sec that he didn't want to work with him. I don't know what the true story is. It sucks. It sucks. And it sucks too because, yeah, like, as far as, like, why didn't you bring the throwbacks in? I love Dasher. Dasher is the best. He is such a super good guy. And obviously, like, he's somebody else that I followed from, like, earlier in his career. And, like, he really struggled. And then when he had the Dasher Hatfield character, like, everything just fell into place. And it's like, when you see that type of commitment, you want to reward it as much as possible. Dasher admittedly didn't feel comfortable doing the studio tapings. They're not comfortable for everybody. His biggest concern was that, you know, if he got injured, he would want to, I guess, get injured in front of more people, which is kind of bizarre, but at the same time, like, I can kind of understand it. So that's another thing too, is like, you know, we need guys to commit to the studio tapings if we're going to be able to use them, unless they have that, like, big name value, you know, like, but then again, we just had Michael Elgin do a studio taping. So I don't know if there's a bigger wrestler in 2013 than Michael Elgin, but, yeah. You know, I would have loved to have worked with the throwbacks more. And, you know, I was basically told that I, you know, couldn't use Dasher and Sugar as a team. And we had already had Sugar teaming with Epic anyway, so that wasn't that big of a deal. But, like, Dasher is known primarily as a tag team wrestler. So it's like, well, if you can't team with Sugar and obviously teaming with Mark isn't working out anymore either, like, he's kind of odd man out. And that sucks. That is political. You know what I mean? That definitely sucks because he's a guy that should be working in more places.
Just remember, folks, wrestling is politics.
Yeah, so that's American Rana wouldn't have been the perfect place to blow off that match or blow off that fucking feud, but oh well.
Yeah, no, you said a mouthful. I think that, like I mean, said, that question was a lot less innocuous than I thought it was originally.
I mean, too, like, Angels loss is Dickinson's gain. That's how I look at it.
There you go. So, Alicia Giannotto, you've answered part of this question. You've pretty much answered the whole thing, but was Gargano going to be in the main event, and how did you decide to have who in their place? I believe, you know, decide who was in their card placement.
Yeah, I don't ever remember as much as we'd put the card together at any point, though, considering putting JT and Gargano. But what I did want to do was with the Best in New England challenge series, however we had sort of positioned those series of matches, I did want to make sure that all three of them ran together. And so that kind of dictated the order in which you put them in. I don't know if, again, if Biff and Eddie didn't have that unbelievable match at We Care a Lot, I don't think that I would have put them last. I probably would have put the Best in New England challenge coming back. I probably would have put the Best in New England challenge matches coming back from intermission and then finished with Steen and Masato or with Dickinson and Gulak. That's right. Probably what I would have done. But
well, you could have also added Stone and Fox and then had Nick K now? I guess Nick K now carry him off and that's the end. That's the end of the show.
That would have been interesting. As far as sharing my booking perspective, let me just get this out there too. I hate, like, angles that happen in the matches. Like, if people are coming to the card, it's because you've sold them on your lineup. And that means that you should be delivering those matches and letting the wrestlers wrestle to the best of their ability. Like, if you're going to be running an angle, it should be happening before the match or it should be happening after the match. So that's another thing too, is like, obviously we wanted to do something with Nick and Anthony Stone. And so while maybe it didn't have the same impact that it would have if he had interfered and cost Anthony Stone the match, I'm glad that Stone and Fox got to wrestle the best match that they were capable of. And then we saved it for afterwards, even though it may have left people a little bit confused.
Thank you for doing that, Drew, because that pisses me off too.
It almost sounds like you're saying you're okay with Daniel Bryan winning the title and then losing it on Raw. That's what I just heard.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, that's what happened.
Drew is in the indie wrestling bubble, not the WWE bubble.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wrong show.
He did that? When? When did he win the title?
So what? Jerome, do you remember? So Daniel Bryan beat, what? He beat Randy Orton. He beat Randy Orton for the title, or the title was held up. It was in abeyance. He won the title from Randy Orton at a pay-per-view, and then the next night at Raw, they stripped him of it.
Yes.
So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on. Anthony Millo. Did guys like Edwards and Steen talk to the wrestlers before the matches, or did they call it in the ring, or do you allow that? Drew, you dictator, you. Do you allow that?
I mean, I prefer that guys plan out the major points of their match ahead of time just so that way everybody's sort of on the same page, including the official. Because, dude, how bad does it suck when, like, a match is so good and then, like, the referee blows the call? And the referee always gets blamed, but sometimes it's not his fault. Dickinson and Gulak didn't call anything. They just went to the ring and just freestyled it, as AR Fox calls it. They were just freestyling out there, and they didn't even go along with the planned finish that they had. I don't think, which is awesome. You know, that's a testament crazy. Of like Jeez. Two wrestlers that are so skilled that they can feel the crowd and be able to, you know, change on the fly, to adapt to what the fans want to see, and then be able to deliver an even bigger capacity. That's the true spirit of professional wrestling, because there are a lot of improvisational elements. But I mean, I wasn't there when Steen and Masada planned their match. Who was the other guy that he was asking about? Cabana?
No, just Edwards and Steen. I'm sure he was just asking in general, like, you know, because they're, you know, nowadays fans kind of know.
Each wrestler has their preference. There's some guys that will literally plan out every punch that they throw, every footstep that they take, and there's other guys that will be like, hey, I'll see you out there. <That's> So awesome. I would probably, if I had to guess, just to throw out an educated guess, I would probably guess that Steen and Masada probably planned a lot, because in a situation where your opponent's hurt, you don't want to spring anything on them that they're not prepared for or they're not comfortable with. Whereas I would guess that probably Busick and Edwards, since they had already wrestled once before and were somewhat familiar with each other's timing, probably didn't plan as much.
One day we'll have a ref cam and it'll be a Masada match where he just takes out those spikes and says, hey, I know we didn't plan this. Bam! That would be great. I'd pay for that.
Okay. I don't care. You know what I mean? If it's a good match, I don't care. I'm not concerned about the road as much as the destination.
So Stuart B. asks, the entire card looks stacked. Do you think Maryland is an easy place to get wrestlers to fly to?
Let me answer that question by saying that Texas is a hard place to fly wrestlers from. But if somebody's good, we'll still do it. So I would imagine that with Baltimore and then probably Washington, D.C., those are some bigger airports. It's obviously up to the promoter that's going to be putting up the money for it. And then if those guys have a strong enough fan base to justify the following, you know what's very important too is, like, it's not necessarily just how strong your fan base is, but also how you're being presented. Like, you could bring out like a draw, and if he's not promoted properly or if he's not put in the right situation, it's a waste of money. It's like, you know, you're better off just using your local ticket sellers than bringing in somebody with name value that you're not going to feature in the right situation. So obviously that's very difficult. Like, I'm trying to think of an instance, because I'm sure this has happened, where it's like the fans like demand somebody to come in, and then like they come in and you know, the promoter brings them in because they know the fans want them, but like they're not familiar enough with that person enough to understand why the fans want them. And so it's just like, it's kind of like a waste of resources. It's like, it's not the best use of that particular talent. So I'm interested in seeing what's going on in Maryland, that our friend is so, you know, so familiar with. I mean, perhaps he's going to be starting his own independent wrestling organization in Maryland.
Sure. I mean, his second question is, was it hard to get the fans to stay standing, or did you purposely do that? Yes. That's what I'm going to say.
We didn't tell anybody that there weren't going to be chairs there.
Well, there you go. So you purposely did that.
And nobody knew ahead of time. I mean, we have, there's the upper deck. That's not what it's called. An upper deck is when you take a shit and somebody's,
wow.
There was the balcony. this is a long podcast. There's the balcony. There's the balcony. There's the balcony area where people could stand and lean on the, I can't think of what things are called now. What do you call it? The railing.
Yeah, just okay. The second floor.
So, you know, there was the balcony where people would stand on the railing, and then we had put up some seats on the stage. And then it was just like, you know, we did have a few complaints after the show, because people were unprepared. Like, oh, I didn't know I was going to have to be standing the whole time. The majority of the people liked it, and that definitely enhanced the atmosphere. Because if you're standing, then you can go right up to the ringside and lean on the apron. And it's almost like if you've ever – have you ever been to a concert? Yeah, you've been to a concert. And if you've ever gone to a concert and it's like – almost like part of the fun is like trying to push all the way to the front, like through the mosh pit, like through the fucking people that are shoving you. Like if you really want to get up front, then it's kind of like you have to work for it a little bit. And it's the same way with the Beyond Wrestling shows. If you really want to stand ringside, you'll be able to work your way to that spot.
If I'm ever at a Beyond Wrestling show, I will start the mosh pit and you'll have to get through me.
Awesome. You know, and then it was like we realized that some people did want to sit on the stage, and I thought the only fair way to do it was by selling those as separate tickets. And you know, we've done the best that I can, I think, to make it a good value. You know, for the people that pay VIP tickets, they get reserved stage seating, they get a $5 voucher towards food, they get early admission, and that allows them to go like to a meet and greet to meet all the wrestlers on the show. So you know, for the extra $15, I think that is well worth it. But the majority of the fans do prefer to stand, and I think that there's enough energy throughout the show that the majority of the people don't get tired.
And I have saved,
like, dude, like, haven't people ever been to like an Ozfest or something where it's like an outdoor concert where you just stand for 13 hours? Like,
maybe this is not popular in that area. I mean, I don't know where Stewart is asking from.
Big wrestling fans leave their house besides wrestling shows.
The people that we get like aren't the people that I would consider as like they're not the people that I would expect to come out to the shows. Let me put it like that. Like, and that's how it's like, oh cool, like maybe we're actually onto the start of something. Like, girls are coming to our shows.
There you go. That's a success.
This is how Drew's gonna meet his wife and get out of wrestling for good.
I don't think so.
Oh man. So I have saved the best for last, our very own Kevin Ford. Unquestionably, this was the biggest Beyond Wrestling event to date. Of the new talent that debuted, Steen, Masada, Cabana, etc., was there anyone you were nervous about approaching to be on the show for one reason or another?
Yeah, just because it's like one of those things where, you know, I've only been working in wrestling. You know, my reputation in wrestling really only goes as far back as the start of Beyond Wrestling. So that's only about 4 years. And it is nerve-wracking to approach guys that you've never worked with before, especially, you know, a lot of times it's like you come across a guy in a show and it's like, you're able to talk to him face to face, and it's like, okay, cool. That's a cool guy. That's somebody that I want to work with. But to basically like cold call somebody, you know, send somebody an email like out of nowhere, like, hey, you know, I want you to come in. And then obviously negotiating the money is something that can be a bit difficult too, because this is like one of those things where it can be somewhat short-sighted. Where like, let's say a wrestler's like, haha, look at this kid, he's just a fucking mark. Like, I'm going to get a huge payday out of him. And it's like, cool, you can do that. But then if you, like, get so much money that you run the company out of business, like, as opposed to being reasonable and being able to work there frequently, and having had not worked with some of those guys before, it's like, I was worried about that. Obviously, it didn't turn out to be the case. And all the guys that we brought in that we had never worked before were completely awesome and totally reasonable. And like I said, really worked towards making Beyond Wrestling a better place. But yeah, I was definitely nervous about approaching a couple guys in particular. You know, honestly, I was nervous about approaching Cabana in particular, because I remember having a conversation with him when Beyond Wrestling was first started, when, you know, he'd come in for AIW, and he's just like, so what do you guys just like, you just don't wrestle for a crowd? I'm just like, no. It's like, so how do you get paid? It's like, you know, we don't always get paid. It's just like, well, on paper, that kind of goes against everything that wrestling stands for. So for somebody that, you know, has a decade of experience and is a bit closer to a more traditional aspect of wrestling, like, you can understand why that's almost, it's almost like insulting, which is obviously not the intention when we started Beyond Wrestling. So, and I was a bit nervous approaching Colt. And, but, you know, he had seen how much we had grown as an organization. And I think, you know, having had seen how Beyond Wrestling had come up and sort of given a better perspective as to, you know, this is why we run these studio tapings and this is what it has all sort of led towards. So, you know, there turned out to be no issues whatsoever in that regard. And Steen, you know, you guys have had him on the podcast before. Like, he's a super, super cool guy. And I think that now that, you know, like, I'm not trying to fucking ruin anybody's wrestling character. I think that now that he's doing the wrestling escapades and the Kevin Steen shows, like, people see that, like, he's just like a total sweetheart. Which, when you see somebody that's portraying like such a fucking maniacal character, you don't necessarily think that, like, hey, this is going to be the easiest guy to deal with. Same with Masada. Like, Masada's fucking crazy when he's in the ring. When he's out of the ring, he's a total professional. You know, and we had the benefit of the doubt working with Gargano before, and I had super high opinion of Eddie Edwards when Dickinson canceled that We Care A Lot, and I hit up Eddie day of, and I was just like, hey, man, like, we're kind of fucked. Like, what can you do to help us out? And he's like, I'm there, man. And he could have, you know, he could have held me up for a lot of money because it was one of those situations where it was just like, I know you need me. And he didn't, because those guys are total professionals. So even though I was a bit nervous, I've got to say that calmed my nerves almost to a fault. Sounds like, yeah, I'm ready to work with everybody. And you know, there are some people that have a reputation who maybe don't necessarily deserve a second chance. So that was the first part of the question, was who was I nervous working with? What was the second part?
The second part is, the show seems to be a success critically and financially, given that more and more events are being run at Fate Music. Coming into the event, were you looking for Fate Music to be the venue for Beyond, akin to Reseda being PWG's building?
Yeah, without question. Absolutely. Like I said, since I moved back from Rhode Island, my number one goal was getting in Fate. And, you know, we had done shows in Bridgewater, we had done shows in East Greenwich, but doesn't matter how close you are to Providence. Like, Providence is Providence. You got to run in the city. And, you know, when I had moved back home, Fet had just opened. It was a state-of-the-art facility. And it was a long shot. But come to find out, like, Fet is really interested in working with different projects to sort of expand their clientele, let's say. And think about Oneyville is, like, for people that know Rhode Island, like, for people that don't know anything about Oneyville, like, they probably don't think anything of it. But for people from Rhode Island, whatever, like, they look at it as, like, a dangerous area. But, like, I used to go out there and hang out in high school because that's like the artsy-fartsy part of town. Like, there used to be this big, I don't know, like, movement. Like, I don't know what you would even call it, but, like, there was a lot of abandoned mill areas, and there was this project called, like, Fort Thunder. That was in like on the outskirts of the Oneyville area back in the day. And like that was where, you know, the Rhode Island School of Design, RISD, like a lot of the people would sort of congregate there. And like there's this huge arts community. And I feel like with Fet, it's almost like at the forefront of like this artistic revival in sort of the West End of Providence. And it's cool that we're able to be there. And, you know, at Point of No Return, when Dickinson and Ciampa started fighting, the lady that was in charge of booking us, like, came out and, like, actually got in between them and tried to stop them from fighting. It was like, where's my security? Where's my security? What is going on? And, like, you know, when we went to square up later in the night, I was just like, so what did you think of the show? And she was like, this is the best theater I've ever seen in my entire life. So, you know, for somebody that doesn't understand theater, you know, I only understand wrestling. It's pretty much the only thing that I've done with my life for the last 15 years. But, you know... From her perspective, for her not understanding wrestling, you know, if she has to relate it to theater in order to be able to understand it, if she said it's the best theater that she's ever seen, like, fuck yeah, rock and roll. That sounds pretty awesome. So Fet is really supportive of what we do. And it's not like, you know, running in a nice, you know, dude, when we ran in a nice Columbus, like, it looks fucking cheesy. Like, when you know, the building, like, dude, like, I don't know what the fuck PWG, like, California, there ain't no Knights of Columbuses that look like whatever building they run in Reseda, because they run a Legion, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Is that what it is? It's a Legion?
Yes.
Yeah, dude. There ain't no Legions or you know, VWF halls in Rhode Island that look as upscale as that. Like, that building looks cool. But you know, we have like the building we were running at Bridgewater had like the shitty wallpapering, like these like dinky, like plastic vines that were like across the walls. Like, what, like, this place looks stupid. And Fet looked fucking cool as shit. And like I said, the fact that it was in Providence, the fact that they were super supportive, and the fact that they want to do more, like, yeah. When we booked American Rana, I asked the lady, like, what do you want us to draw? And she said 300. And I said, let's shoot for 4. We ended up hitting 3. So she was happy. But you always got to set your sights as, you know, bigger and bigger and bigger, because it's the only way you're ever going to grow. I you know, and, like, I have a lot of respect for what PWG does. Obviously, they are number one by far in wrestling, but sometimes I try and envision what it would be like to be in that situation, and it would just be like, I don't know if I would be content. Like, I literally want to run like Beyond Wrestling until the wheels fall off. Like, I want to just get as big as we possibly can, and then that'll be it. Because I really want to see how far it can go. And I don't think that we've scratched the surface, but I think we're getting a little bit closer now that we have successful live events. I mean, you got to remember the number one source of income for us, up until American Rana was everything that we had done online. Like, we barely sold any fucking DVDs. Like, it was all YouTube, and then sometimes the name your own price downloads. And with American Rana, I was like, oh shit, like, we can actually run shows that make money and then put them into other shows. Like, oh, is this how everybody else does it? I guess it kind of makes sense.
How a real wrestling company works.
But the fact that we have all that, you know, not all that money, but the fact that we still have the money coming in from YouTube, like, it puts us in a more comfortable position than we've been in before. With that said, I still run every show, putting all of our resources into it. I mean, dude, if you look at the tournament for tomorrow lineup, I've got like 60 wrestlers booked. It's like a fucking King of Trios size lineup. It's a very ambitious weekend, but like I said, I want to go bigger and bigger and bigger with every single show. I'm hoping that means that we can run more shows that are even bigger in 2014. And if Tournament for Tomorrow is the last show we ever run, then I'll be content knowing that, you know, hopefully we're successful in elevating, you know, the careers of those that were associated with it. But I don't envision us leaving FIT anytime soon. It's just, you know, it's funny the way things worked out with the Church of Providence, which we had, you know, touched upon at the start of the podcast, where it's like you've got this total variety show that just happens to want to have wrestling, and, oh, we just happen to run wrestling in that same building. Like, all of a sudden, now we have this opportunity to expose Beyond Wrestling to hundreds of people that are obviously willing to come to that area but may not know what we're all about. So, yeah, FIT is our home.
Well, I certainly hope it is not the last show. And, you know, Drew, I really appreciate you coming on here and being as honest as you have been. And Jerome, do you have any other questions?
Not really. We're almost at the 2-hour mark. Man, Drew can talk. But one of my goals next year is to make it to a Beyond show in Providence. So yes. Please draw. Please go support them so I can go next year.
There you go.
Let's see if any fans might have tweeted me questions, because I put out that I was going to field some questions.
Other than asking, are you going to host the next King of Trios?
I think we're going to do Queen and King of Trios next year. It'll be one person from WSU, one person from Beyond, one person from CZW. And then after that, we're going to run the 24-hour show. And then after that, I'm going to see if we can book a cruise where you're on a cruise and there's also wrestling shows on a cruise. And then I'm going to use that to try and like do some pirate shit, like fucking steal like a battleship and like bring it into international waters and do like,
it's got to be
just,
a
like,
golden
super legal card.
Yeah.
And then I'll be like that guy that's stuck in Russia for the rest of his life. So that's kind of, you know, if I had to talk about a 5-year plan, that's what we're probably looking at. It's like hijacking a government battleship to do a wrestling show. That's where I see
it. 24-hour show. I think it is a requirement that TJ Hawk has to be there.
He's probably the one person right now asking, so does AR Fox count as a Beyond or CZW guy?
Is that even? I don't know what that means, but
I don't even. Yeah.
I don't know what that means, but they got a rise out of me.
That's awesome. All right, so Drew, of course, this series, we thank everyone for submitting your questions. I will be announcing the next, I want to say, Drew, obviously, you know, we've enjoyed this. You're coming back on. I mean, you were the first person I talked to when it came up with this concept. I do want to do one of the All Killer playlists that you have for free on youtube.com/beyondwrestling. Of course, as we noted, you know, hey, if you go out and buy American Raw on DVD, it's well worth the money. But if you want to check out Beyond for free, go to their YouTube and support them that way as well. I will announce on the website which All Killer playlist it will be for next time. So, Drew, thank you again, sir. Really appreciate it. Jerome, you're the senior editor, so I appreciate you being here too. For everyone else, thank you for submitting your questions and hope you enjoy this. Please share this with your friends. And as always, thank you for supporting pwponderings.com.
I can't wait till we have Billy Corgan on to discuss a Resistance Pro booking show.
And a TNA show.